Well, hello everybody, welcome back to the program. We have been taking this deep dive into how to not get turned down, and today we come to a massively important moment. This is the pivotal moment, the point of no return, where you are either going to get it fixed or you are going to get it turned down. And so we have a lot to talk about, so let's just get started. Well, hello everybody, welcome back. My name is Stephen Reed. I am the co-founder and president and part of the team here at Music and Ministry. We're a nonprofit organization that is dedicated to helping people just like you, hopefully, do whatever it is that God's called you to do with either music and or ministry. And so we have quite a few different resources, and I'm not a big pusher of things on people, but today it seemed good to talk about one of the books that I've written, and this is called Getting Your Church to Sing. And it's a big book, and it has a lot to do with the leadership part of leading worship, because leading worship has something to do with music, but it has a lot more to do with theology, knowing where you're going, and then knowing how to get people to come with you. And so check that out. It's available in print. It's ebook, and you can listen to my sweet voice read it aloud to you. Or in the world of AI, you could probably have somebody else read it to you very quickly. It's kind of crazy like that. So great resource. But today we are diving deep into this idea of music and making the music sound good. But more importantly than that, being good stewards of people's time and energy, because lots of times people, churches huge and small, are getting turned down. And there's a lot of reasons. And good musicians are often getting turned down. And so we've been going through these different things just to try and help us accomplish what it is that we want to accomplish. Because it's not fun to be turned down, and it's not so great when you look up there and you can't hear what it is that you see. And so, as I've mentioned, there are six reasons why people aren't going to get any better or would potentially be getting turned down. And we're going to talk a lot about those today. So we need to make sure that you're fresh on those. Number one is going to be pride. And there is so much that has to do with that. We will talk a lot about today. But pride means, hey, I'm awesome. And then it is also self-protective and usually self-affirming. And that creates what we're going to refer to a lot today as the cycle of pride. The second one is going to be ignorance, meaning you just don't know what you don't know, and that can sometimes cause you to make mistakes. We'll talk a lot about that today. Number three is going to be this idea that we've been covering really deeply here at the beginning, which is the idea of bad systems, because bad systems make good musicians make bad choices, or we've said it another way, it's something, anything that makes it difficult for musicians to make good decisions. And so, again, this is stuff that applies to the best musicians I've ever seen are in a group and named groups that you would know their name if I mentioned them, and yet they're still having the same issues as the rest of us. Why? Because they're having problems with their systems. Number four is something we keep almost apologizing for, but it's just what it is. It's deception. And unfortunately, there's quite a bit of deception that is involved in the music industry and any of the churches that are involved in the music industry, just presenting something as something it is not. And then also we get quite a bit of deception in the church at the local level, where we don't always tell everybody what it is that we're doing, and we'll have people turned off and we don't communicate. And some of that is because of these other reasons, but we need to fix some of those things in order to get to where we want to go. All right, so then number five is going to be an current inability, meaning there's just some things that we don't know how to do yet. And that, as we've talked about, means like we're not computers, we're not machines, we can't operate at that level. And so we need to accommodate what it is that we're doing based on our humanity. But then there's also some limitations. And I mentioned in a previous episode, I'm not a super great harmony singer. So if you ask me to sing harmony, I may or may not do well. And so we got to kind of put people in the right position. All right, the last one is going to be unwillingness. And I almost want to throw in another one, but I think it falls under unwillingness in the sense of just preferences, meaning like there's sometimes you just don't want to do it. It's like, yeah, okay, I see how that could work, but I don't want to put in the effort to do that, or I don't particularly like that style of playing, or whatever it would happen to be. And so you become unwilling. And so usually that's not necessarily like because you're a bad person. It's just maybe you have different preferences, or maybe you just doesn't seem like it's worth it, or you found another way that seems just as good. So all of those things factor in, but again, we are talking deeply about the idea of bad systems, and we've talked about the wrong systems, and today we're going to talk about incomplete systems and or missing people and then mismatched systems, because What happens and what we're referring to in this pivotal moment is going to be when we all come together, regardless of how we figured out who's going to be on the team and what we're going to, parts we're going to play, the instruments that we're going to use, and we all kind of hook up to the system, whatever that system would be. That moment of how are we monitoring, who's in charge, how are these all systems put in place will determine whether or not people are going to get turned down or whether or not people can be heard or not. And in this moment, depending on what it is that you have, you may or may not be able to recover from this. In all of the other bad systems that I've mentioned, there's at least a chance to fix it, and this is that moment. And so we need to make sure that we're winning and have our things in order in this place. All right, so the good news is that there's no one particular way to do it. And the bad news is there's no one particular way to do it, so I can't just be like, oh, it's exactly this and do it exactly this, all right? And some of that's going to come down to your preferences, sometimes to your people. But there's part of it that's just like a general ignorance, just in the fact that we don't exactly know how maybe these things work at a professional level, or that they could work if we changed up the system, all right? And so we talked last time about this idea and this comparison that as movies are to a play, so are recordings to a live performance. And I think that's a fair assessment, a fair analogy. And so there's a lot of things that we can really take away and understand. And so I want to talk just a little bit about that, because there are some people that are missing, or at least positions that maybe aren't being filled, that because of a lack of understanding of how recordings are made, those people then don't exist in our live format. And so if you take a movie and you say, okay, who's in charge of a movie? And most everybody would quickly say, oh, it's the director. All right. And if I were to mention some famous directors, you would potentially know who those people are. And so, you know, Christopher Nolan, you have Steven Spielberg, you've got Hitchcock. I mean, you got all these other people that if you're a movie person, you know, oh, I like their movies. And so in a live play, right, the live version of what a movie would be, we also know that every play has a director, and they're the ones that are in charge, and they're doing all of the things that they're doing, all right? What we don't necessarily know is that in recorded music, there's also a director. We don't call him the director or her the director, but there's very much a person that most people don't know exists. And so then when we come into our live version of the recording and our live music, we leave that person out, or we've assigned portions of what that person would do to other people without the corresponding authority then to make that thing happen. All right. So one of the things that is key here is that the director is always, when you think about where is the director sitting, there's a director's chair, right? And that's kind of the famous thing. And what are they looking at? Almost always, the director is going to be watching the little screen and seeing how it's being filmed, right? They're not necessarily looking at what else is happening. They're looking at what is the audience going to see? What does it look like on film? Because that's the reality that matters. Everything else about everything that's happening doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is what is being printed on that little screen that's going to show in the movie theaters. All right. Now, if you think about the same thing for a director of a play, where are they sitting during all the rehearsals, during all the stuff, right? They're not backstage. They're not somewhere else. They're in the audience. Well, they're there because that's what the people are going to see. And so they want to see it from the people's perspective. Now, the night of the show, they might be backstage. They might be in the side. There's a whole, maybe in there in the back. I don't know where directors go. But by then, everything has been worked out to, hey, this is going to work for our audience. And so this is the idea that I want us to really jump on today, is that regardless of what you do or how you do it, you must somehow be connected to reality. All right. And I would maybe say tethered to reality, or have a lifeline to reality, because what will happen is that you'll have all these other realities. And as we get into it, you'll see it and you'll be like, oh, yeah, we've got a lot of alternate realities. So much so that the only person who is at all living in reality in our live music is going to be the sound person. And so then if they have all of the responsibility and usually they have no authority, then it creates a whole lot of problems. All right. Now, those are movies and those are plays, but let's make that then correlation to our recorded music. Now, most of the time people think, and this is how I thought, so They think that recorded music is just a band gets together, they've written some songs, and then they hire somebody to go into a studio who pushes the button, record with the band playing, right? And that is not at all how it goes. And living here in Nashville, I have found out how crazy that can sometimes be, that the people that you listen to on the recordings sometimes aren't even the people that are in the band. And that's like pretty common. And you would think, what are you talking about, Steve? It's like, well, if you've ever looked at the additional musicians on the little, you know, fold out things that they used to put in our albums, or some now have, some have online, they'll have other people's names who play drums. And yes, those are the guys that you're hearing on the recording. And so we're like, all right, well, that's a recording, Steve. What about church? We're talking about church. And so, you know, all of the recordings that we then follow, which is how we do things, somebody puts out an album and we're like, oh, I'm going to learn the song based on that and all of the stuff that happens. And we kind of have this imagination. Again, nobody told us this. This isn't deception. This is us like kind of filling in our own blanks as far as our imagination. All right. Now, certainly the record people in those churches kind of like want you to think that, so they don't correct you if you think that way. But this is how I used to think that it went, was that there would be a church somewhere who just had this amazing worship team. And in their church, they had cultivated this group of songwriters, and they were doing their songs, and it was going super well in church. And so they decided, hey, let's record these songs. Let's make an album. And so then they all got together, just like we all do at our midweek rehearsal, if we had one, or maybe they had special rehearsals. And then they would work up these songs, and they would all just be like, oh, their drummer would come up with something, and, oh man, that drummer's just so creative, and wow, they've got such a great group that can put all these things together. And then they have somebody come, and they connect to their soundboard somehow, and they push record on what would be a normal church service. And then they'd go back afterwards, and if somebody sang off pitch or maybe somebody played a wrong note, they would, you know, fix that and let them play the part again if just for a moment, you know, and fix it that way. And then, you know, maybe a couple months later, then they would release that, right? And most of you are saying like, yeah, that's how it works, all right? But I'm here to tell you that that's not how it works, and it's not at all how it works. And it's been a little shocking, a little disheartening, as we've talked quite a bit, that churches, most of the time, didn't write the songs, are not the ones who came up with the parts, and then what you're hearing is not actually live. A lot of time it's pre-recorded or completely recorded after the fact. And you're like, well, wait a minute, well, how does that all work? And it wasn't the team that put it all together, which is the point of what we're talking about today. And so churches hire these people called producers. And this is the same thing that happens in our secular world or any other album, is this person called the producer, who would more or less be the director, they're the ones in charge. And so they're the ones who decide who's going to be playing on the record. They decide what they're going to be playing on the record. Then they also are the ones that go back and re-record and work with people. And there's, you know, we'll say, yes, this is in, this is out. And they'll go through this whole process. And so we don't know that is a thing, because again, we just think, well, they just put it together themselves. And a lot of, for whatever reason, producers in music don't have the same fame that directors have in movies. And so if I named for you the top three or four producers of all times, you may or may not know any of them. And so there are people, especially here in Nashville, that are more famous than some artists, just because we all recognize they're the ones that actually made the albums. And so churches, big churches, a lot of times will have producers that they hire on staff, that they are part of their church, not because they just happen to attend that church, it's because they got a job and moved to be there, and that's their full-time job, is deciding what everybody else is going to play. Right. And sometimes people will hire other producers. And I know quite a few producers here in town who don't go to that church, don't know them at all. They just got hired by some church to, hey, make us an album, or some artist individual, hey, make me an album. And so then they're the ones that created all of those things. And their name is maybe in there somewhere in the back, produced by. But because most people don't know what that means, then it doesn't make a whole big a difference. And so then people think, well, the artists or the church, they're the ones that are popular or famous. So all that to say that the producer is the person in charge. And there's this whole process of they're figuring out what to play, they're listening to it, and then even if they have people play on it, they will come and they will come back to the studio and they will all listen to it and they will connect back to this idea of reality. What does it sound like on the recording? That's what's going to go out to people. So regardless of what else is happening, the only thing that matters is how it sounds when people are listening. So then when we come over to our live scenario and we don't have a producer and we all think, well, we'll all just kind of do it, we then have to be very conscious of how are we connecting ourselves? How are we tethered to reality? And the unfortunate reality is that we're not. And so people will sometimes have what's known as a music director or MD in our worship world. And so it's a funny thing to me because music director or MD for a like bigger band has a lot more responsibility, does a lot more things than the MD would for a worship team. And so if you don't know what an MD is in the worship team world, it's usually the person who has their own talkback microphone, and they're, you know, sometimes it's the bass player, somebody who isn't singing, and they'll all be wearing in-ears, and so that person talks to the rest of the band via that microphone that's only on in their in-ears, and he'll say, all right, chorus, here we go, 3, 2, 1, and then, all right, everybody build up, we're going into the bridge, and he kind of is directing everybody where they're going in the team. Now, that's not to say that that's not important, but it is missing quite a few of the components of what a normal music director would do in the music world. And so I know quite a few music directors here in Nashville, and I talk to them regularly to ask them, how does it work? What do you do? All right. And so it is their responsibility to pick the musicians that are going to be on the team. All right. Now, for you all, that may just be set like, hey, you've got a team and that's what it is. And every week you're going to have these people on the team because you signed in blood at one point that, hey, I'm joining the worship team and you don't want to let them go. And that's fine. All right. So if you have a violin player, you're going to have violin on every single song. All right. And that's fine. But we just have to then adapt. We have to change. We're going to have to reorchestrate. And as we talked about last time, you have to reorchestrate because of the recording to live conversion that has to happen. We're going to dive back more into that in the future. But part of it is we have to have these positions in place, these jobs in place, otherwise you're not going to be able to know how to do that, or it's not going to work when you all come to the table. All right, so the music director picks who's on the team. They also decide what everybody's going to play. And so that's a big deal. All right, who is doing that in your team? And the answer may be, oh, well, it's ourselves, or it's each individual one of us, right? And so in that regard, everybody's the music director, in which case nobody's the music director, all right? And then oftentimes for live performances, the music director will then on the day be responsible for listening to how that it's going and making decisions as far as like, hey, that's not working there. Let's make some changes. And then certainly then during the performance, if they're using in-ears, then that person will talk via the microphone to everybody. Or if there's not microphones, they'll be the one that will be looking around and will be sometimes just talking out and mouthing things, giving signals of, hey, this is where we're going, all right? Sometimes the music director in our worship environment will be the worship leader. And so there's lots of different things that could possibly be happening. And so then the question is, how is that music director, if they're the ones in charge, if they're the producer of the live environment, how are they tethered to reality? And if you're like, well, they've got their in-ears and they've got a mix, well, you've got a completely different system. Like, that's not going to work because as we've been going through, it just is different. And so I've talked to quite a few people. They're just like, yeah, I guess I just hope that it all works out. And I can guarantee you that it's not working out because I've been in the audience and I'm like, what you think you're listening to is not what the rest of us are listening to. So there's got to be some way, some person possibly, that is then connecting the music director to the reality of what it is that's happening. Now, you can also do that in your monitoring of how you set those things up, because oftentimes in my world, I'm also the music director, I'm also the worship leader, And then I'm also what would be the next position, which would be the engineer. And so the engineer is the person that's pushing all the buttons. And so in a recording session, used to be that everybody would just hire an engineer, and these people aren't necessarily making any decisions or anything. They're just like, hey, I'd like it to sound a little brighter. And then that person says, oh, well, then I'll turn this knob and make this thing. It's like, does that sound good? And the producer would be like, yeah, that sounds good. And so then they would work together to create the sound. Right now, as budgets have been cut in the music world, a lot of times the producers are also the engineers, but that's not always true. And in the case of our live version of things, we very rarely, the sound person is also the producer or is in charge. In fact, most of the time, the sound person has absolutely no authority and can't say anything, nor would it be received well. All right. And so what we then have is this missing link, this lack of communication. And it's a lot like if you were to design an electrical system, maybe to turn on some of these lights that are back here and over there. Well, everything can be in place, but if you're missing a light bulb, well, then it's not going to work. Or we could have light bulbs, but if we forgot a light switch, or if we forgot the breaker, or if we forgot some other aspect, like one wire, we could have all the other wires wired up, but if the wire from there to there doesn't work, well, then it doesn't work. And so that's where we have an incomplete system. And so, again, lots of ways that you can create this sense of reality, but you have to then figure out, all right, who is that person and where are they? And then how do we connect them to reality? And so that can get really complicated really fast, but it can be done, and it makes a huge difference. And I do that all the time when we go and we do traveling and training of people, and I'll stand out and I'll be the producer. And I will say, all right, you play this, you play that. Okay, yeah, that's working, that's not working. I'll talk with the sound person and be like, hey, what do you think? Should we turn that down? What if we tried rolling a little bit of this off? Okay, yeah, that sounds good. What do you think? Come stand over here, and we'll be in the place where the people are. And so that can, I mean, just so much can be talked about in that moment. And so I would want to spend the rest of our time that we have here together talking about some different ways that could possibly happen, different scenarios. All right. So in my case, I am the music director. I am also the one who does the engineering, and I'm also the worship leader. And so a lot of times we think the worship leader would be, oh, well, they're the producer. And really, if you were to compare it to a movie or if you were compared to a play, the worship leader is really most often going to be like the lead character. They're the ones that the audience is seeing. You know, in a movie, you never see the director. And I mean, there are some where the director is also in the movie. That's obviously rare, but it does happen, and they have to have a support staff of people that are helping them. But that does happen in our worship environments as well. And so I am the lead person in the sense of I'm the one facing the audience, but I'm also directing the group and deciding what's playing. And then oftentimes, because we don't always have a sound system that we're able to use, or that we don't have sound people that travel with us, and we do all of our orchestration, we've set up everything that we do based on the knowledge that we're not going to have a sound person who is going to be moving a whole bunch of buttons. And so when we go to churches, I go and I talk to them, and I have to open up a line of communication. And so that's a huge word. If you're taking notes, the word communication is a big deal. And I have to tell them, I'm like, look, I don't want you to make any changes. You are not allowed to move buttons, right? If you feel like you want to turn us down, you have to tell me, and we will fix whatever the problem is together. Now, not everybody gets that or knows how to work with that, because most times sound people have never been talked to before. And so they're like, no way, you do whatever you want, and I do whatever I want, and then we don't talk, all right? But that's just not going to work, because I lead some songs, my wife leads some songs, and we just randomly will change who's leading, who's singing harmony. To count on somebody to be able to make all of those changes for us is not going to work. And so we make those changes, and so we've created this system that allows us to make those decisions, all right? And so we then need a sound system and a method of doing that that allows us to hear what reality is. So when we're doing our sound check, I will go out and I will mix in the front. And so I will take my microphone and my guitar, I have a longer cable on my electric guitar, and I will stand out in the audience and I will play my guitar and we will sing and we will work on all of the different things and we'll get it to where like, yeah, that sounds good. That doesn't sound good. All right. So then from there, I have confidence that what is happening in the mains is sounds good to me. I will then do very little of monitoring on stage. Right. And so we're just like, we would much rather hear the mains than hear a monitor because we don't want to create an alternate world because I'm having to make my choices based on what I think is happening in the mains. I don't want it to sound great in my monitor only. I need it to sound good out there. So as much as I can hear out there, that's what I want to do. So we no in-ears. We don't give a monitor to our drummer because if you give them a monitor, they will play louder. If you put them in the cage, they will play even louder still. And then it just gets into this alternate world where they're in their own room and they've got their own stuff. And yet they're turned off at the soundboard in various ways. And so we just don't do it. All right. So that being said, lots of churches have drum cages. Lots of churches have in-ears. And so just by putting in those in-ears, you jump into an alternate world. You're using a different system. In-ears are not the same thing as live speakers. You don't have a, 16-inch subwoofer in your ears. You've got some speakers in there, right? Good ones have four or five different little speakers things going in there, but it's just not the same, and it's not the same mix. And so you need somebody to tell you. You need to be able to ask and talk to that sound person. Hey, what are you doing with the bass guitar? Hey, what are we doing here that you're finding's not working? And are you wanting that acoustic guitar or not acoustic guitar? And I've gone to a church for a long time that was filled with professional musicians, and they had two acoustic guitars every week. And could you ever hear that second guitar? Nope. And I would hear them talk to each other and be like, man, that second guitar sounds so good. Man, I appreciate it. And so they're either lying to that person, all right, or to each other, or they think it sounds good. And as I said from the beginning, you have to understand, and this is the cycle of pride that I wanted to get to today, is that people do what they think sounds good. And so when they come to this pivotal moment that I'm talking about, and it doesn't sound good, you can't let them create an alternate universe where that wrong part sounds right. You have to connect them to what it actually sounds like. All right. And so otherwise, they're going to play what sounds right to them, but it was wrong in the actual universe. They're going to think it sounds awesome. They're each going to say, hey, we think it sounds good. And then somebody, some sweet lady from the audience is going to say, oh, wow, worship was so good today. And it's going to then just trigger that little bit of dopamine in their brain that says, oh, you are as good as you think you are. And then the cycle of pride just keeps reaffirming and reaffirming itself all over and over and over again. And you never get any better, right? So then when the sound person, if they say anything, will say, hey, that's not working. Well, the people on stage won't believe them because they're so stuck in that cycle of pride that it just goes in one ear and out the other, and will often include some offense and just being like, man, what are you talking about? Like, I'm awesome. You can't. And so then often times the sound person is treated poorly, a whipping boy, so to speak. And so that's why they have so much attitude. And I used to think that sound attitude just maybe like was in the board that like maybe just kind of radiated up and people got infected with it. But I've come to realize that it's the system of it that we are creating people with attitude because we say, hey, you have to fix all of this and we're not going to listen to anything that you say. All right. So if you're a church or a group that uses in-ear monitors, you must know that you are blind. You must recognize your blindness, that you need some way to find out, is what I'm playing sounding good? And that can be in the form of a person who would be the role of the producer, that they're out front and they would be telling you, yes, no, yeah, that doesn't work. And a lot of live shows will hire somebody to come and help them with that. And so they'll go out and have the rehearsals and the person will say, hey, that's working, that's not working. And then they make changes based upon that, right? Now, what you can't do is go and listen to your live stream. Because live stream is not the same thing. Most of them are in stereo and it's in a recording and you're missing some of the sound. And they sound awful. And most people don't listen to them because they sound terrible, all right? But what you can do is what a lot of groups will do is that you can record all of the tracks that you're putting into the soundboard via the soundboard to a computer, or if you have a digital soundboard, you can use it as an interface. And so you can, into Logic, Pro Tools, or GarageBand, or any of the other ones that are available out there, you can record what everybody played. You can then reverse that stream, and you can then put all of those sounds back into your soundboard. And then you can have that sound come out of your speakers in your room, and you can have what I would call a mix rehearsal, where then the sound person's going to mix it how they would do it for a Sunday, and it's not going to be 100% accurate like it would be, because the room's not going to be filled with all of the people that would come on a Sunday, so you'll have to take some of those things into consideration. But you can at least listen to, this is what it sounds like. And if you did that, I guarantee there would be a lot of shock, a lot of eyes opened, because it pinpoints and it brings everybody back into, like, hey, this is what it actually sounds like on Sunday. And you're like, well, that's not what it sounds like in my ears. It's like, yeah, because you're in a different system, often in your own little world. We need to make sure that we come back to this reality. And that happens all the time in recording sessions, where people will be in their different rooms and they take a take, and then they'll all come back to the control room and they'll listen to how it goes. The producer will then make notes and say, hey, do this, do that, why don't we change this? And then they all go back out and do to their things. So if you have that model of checking afterwards, well, there's not a whole lot you can do for the service that just happened because it's already over, but it can at least prepare you for the next time. And so you hopefully are breaking the cycle of pride, and then you are also then have that reality and can start making decisions, whoever it is going to be, to then either change your system or change your parts and get it fixed. All right. So, I would encourage you to have some sort of person who is the music director. And I, when we go and do our trainings, I am always looking for who is that person going to be, because you have to, as we've discussed, you have to reorchestrate your music for your group. And certainly, even if you try to do it exactly like the recording, you are most likely unwilling and certainly are unable to do that, because we're not machines and you are in that mono environment. It has to be reorchestrated, and most people don't know how to do that. And so if you feel like you have a group that, yeah, knows how to do that, then you have to then create a system where they all, as they're playing, can hear what is reality. And that's what we try to do in our group. But if you don't have people that are doing that, or just recognize that if they're trying to do that and it's not working, that's probably why it's not working. You have to have somebody who is going to then be in charge and be able to say, hey, yeah, that works. Hey, that doesn't work. Or that person will have to then talk to the sound person and say, hey, is that working? Is that not working? And then the sound person would then need to communicate to that music person. And so what sometimes happens is that sound people will try and talk to the band members, and that doesn't always work because sound people don't always speak the right language or won't say it in the right way, because the cycle of pride is working against them. Whereas if they can talk to a music director and they can say, yeah, hey, I'm having some issues, maybe something in the bridge there sounded like there was some fighting or just some conflict there in the rhythm. And so then they can go, well, let's run it again. And they listen for it and they're like, all right, you play what you're playing, Okay, yeah, that's not going to work. All right, let's try it this way. Drummer, you drop out and just play kick and snare, and or guitar player, you just go all downs and we'll let them carry the rhythm. And then they work it out. All right, now maybe the sound person could say, like, yeah, the drummer's overplaying and it needs to be more on the acoustic. But they're not going to talk to the drummer and say, like, hey, you're messing it up, because that would cause a lot of friction and challenges. All right, so we can go further down that road as far as how you would establish that communication and the rules of how that would work. But you have to recognize this is the moment. That's if you don't have those things in place, then it's just going to be what it is. And again, that cycle of pride is going to cause a lot of problems. Well, that's enough for today. It was a long one, but we're going to jump back into some of these things again. And I will give you some practical, like, this is how these things work, and this is what these people will do. So stick with us and just believe that God's got good things for you, and that these things are going to help you get on the right track.